Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's such a sense of peace to be myself and to be working on becoming myself that it's so worth it.
What three wrestling matches would you watch if you were stranded on a desert island? This is what I'm asking wrestling's best. In the ring, around the ring, behind the scenes, or behind a microphone. I'm Tom Campbell. Thank you for joining me on Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps.
On loan from the Philadelphia Museum of the Finest Arts. Currently appraised at $1,776,001. Still life with apricots and pears.
At Born to Fight 3, I conducted a symphony in the Battle Born Royale. I was down to my final note. And then that bumbling idiot, Billy Avery, ruined everything. At To Infinity and Beyond, I'm going to introduce you to the hottest thing in the art world today, the Venus de Milo.
Still life with apricots and pears. How are you doing?
Oh my God, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Couldn't not do this series without the greatest name in professional wrestling.
Yeah,
genuinely, I'm incredibly excited to get into that part of things. But obviously, we've been in a weird time for not just professional wrestling, but the planet. We're living in this weird hellscape version of 2020. How have you found your time out of wrestling?
It's not the easiest. I had a lot of high hopes for 2020. It was my first kind of really big WrestleMania weekend, was just like on the verge. I had four really exciting bookings that I was like so psyched on, and then those all went away, and it all went away really quickly. So it was difficult, but I'm hanging in there, back to training again and, getting, some matches here or there. So it's I'm feeling really positive. Hopefully 2021 is going to, I can pick right up where I left off and keep going with it.
Did you learn anything about yourself in lockdown or in isolation that you didn't know before?
I learned how much of an indoor kid I am. I didn't totally mind being stuck at home. I missed wrestling and I missed travel and I missed that part, but I was perfectly content kind of like sitting at home with my dog and watching movies and stuff.
what sort of, give me your favorite movie that you and the dog have watched during lockdown.
I guess more it was TV shows actually, but I finally got to watch all of Cowboy Bebop again, which was kind of the only anime I've ever really watched. And I watched it as a kid when it was like on Adult Swim, so I finally got to catch up and watch it straight through in like 2 days. But it's just as good. It holds up.
There's something about binge watching, like especially during lockdown. Like I find that when I binge watch something during lockdown, there is this weird sort of emptiness that resides within you for about an hour afterwards. Like, what did I do with my life before this?
Yeah, and I'm not much of like a binge watcher. Like I need I can do like two episodes and then I just need a break. Or like, I remember I was watching like Game of Thrones a couple of years ago and wanted to watch it all straight through. And I could do like one episode and I needed like an episode of The Office in between. It's just like a bit of a palate cleanser.
We are here to talk about wrestling and we're going to send you onto a desert island.
Okay.
And while you're there, through the power of some weird technology that we haven't quite figured out yet, we're going to burn for you a DVD that you can watch three wrestling matches on.
Okay.
And you are allowed to choose any three matches from any time point that you can watch whilst you are there. What would you like your first match to be?
Okay, so I thought a lot about this, and I had, like, a big, long list, as I sent you. And then I started thinking about, like, what are the important elements of wrestling to me? So I broke it down into three categories. Sorry I went into too much detail on this. But the first piece that's really important to me is creating a sense of emotion. So I think all these matches I picked really had a strong sense of emotion. But there was one that, for me, really stands out. And like, just looking back, like, I was looking at that list, and I could still feel that moment of the match. Like, even though I haven't watched it in quite some time, I still remember that feeling. And that would be Sasha Banks and Bayley from TakeOver Brooklyn, I believe. It was the first time for the NXT women's title. So that would be my number one match.
This is the biggest match of my life. I've been in this position before, and I've had this title match, and every time I've let it slip right through my fingers. But not this time, that's right. You're facing the NXT women's champion. I'm going to teach every single one of these little girls that fairy tales don't have a happy ending.
I'm going to finally prove to the world, prove to my mom who keeps coming to these championship matches and watching me lose, and I'm going to prove to Sasha Banks.
Here comes Bayley. She's finally had enough.
That she was wrong about me, and I will defeat her.
Can you remember where you were when you first watched it?
I was in my apartment. I was alone. And I think that was kind of right as NXT was really picking up. Or is kind of the height of all of it. And I just remember, you know, I'm not much of a crier, especially like watching like TV or movies or anything. But and definitely not wrestling for the most part, but this match, I was just so overwhelmed with like the emotions after it, you know, when Bayley won and finally like achieved her dream. I just remember just like sobbing because it was just such this emotional release, and you can really feel that genuine emotion from her, from the performers. You know, I think that came across more so than any other match I've ever seen. And I've been watching wrestling my whole life. And that one just felt so real. And I think that's especially telling because that era of like NXT, you know, whenever anyone wins like a WWE title, it's their childhood dream, right? Like everyone is achieving their dream. It's this thing they've been looking at their entire lives. So we see that all the time, but for some reason, or not for some reason, it's because she's so good, but when Bayley won it, it felt like, I don't know, it was that magnified by so much. And I just remember that feeling, and I still like kind of hold on to it. And as a performer now, that's kind of something I keep going back to, is like wanting to have that feeling or some kind of emotion or that strong of a reaction from an audience. That she can. So I look up to Bayley a lot for that reason.
What is it you think about that match? Because lots of people talk about it. We've just had a time of recording. We've just had Hell in a Cell 2020, where mm-hmm. they fought again inside a Hell in a Cell, which is wild to think about when you put yourself back at TakeOver Brooklyn to go, oh, by the way, in a few years' time, they're doing this in Hell in a Cell. That's ridiculous.
Yes.
but back then, there was something about this match. There was a starter cap that set off something bigger. What do you think it is about these two in particular that brought that magic out?
It was, I think, just that era of NXT and just wrestling in general. That's a huge part of it. You know, NXT was still this really fresh new thing, which it still kind of is, but at that point it was just, you know, the whole thing was just like lightning in a bottle. And I think a lot of people are going to look back on that era of NXT the same way we talk about like the NWO or ECW or the Attitude Era. Like it was just a really special period in wrestling. So I think, you know, we're going to look back at that. And it was just kind of this rise of women's wrestling, where, you know, they're given much more time. There's, you know, it's this athletic contest on a regular basis. And I think just all of those things made it so special. I think the audience was just so invested into it and so vocal, which, you know, you watch a lot of like WWE nowadays, and it doesn't feel the same energy in the room as there was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you know, 20 years ago during the Attitude Era. it's not the same today, but in NXT at that time it did. Like, you know, everyone was on their feet. So it was almost as if they could do no wrong out there, I feel like, but then they put on this incredible match. And we're doing things, like, I remember there's like a top rope poison Rana, just doing these really, really incredible moves, and have this really technically proficient performance. And then it was also just tied with all this emotion and tied with everything else that was going on in wrestling at the time. So, I think it was just a really, really special moment that could have only really happened once. And not that their matches since then haven't been good. I didn't get happened to see last night's match, but, you know, they're still incredible performers, and you know, I study their matches a lot, but that was just a really, really special moment.
I would highly encourage you to check it out, because in that match they do a callback to TakeOver Brooklyn.
Okay.
And it's one of those, if you blink and you miss it, but if you know, you know, and it's like it's like an Easter egg in the match, and you go, I know what that is. That's nice.
All right, I'll watch it this afternoon.
When did you become a wrestling fan?
I've been a fan like as long as I can remember. I grew up in, you know, outside Philadelphia, which was home to ECW. So, you know, I remember being a kid and flipping through TV, you know, to the TV stations, and there was this one random channel. There's like these weird channels between like channel 12 and like channel 20, which were just like cable access or like all these kind of random channels that I never really looked at. And by chance, I scrolled past ECW, and it just felt like just something totally different. You know, I was so young, so it just felt like the edgiest thing I'd ever seen. And like, I had seen wrestling before, but it didn't really capture me like ECW did. And, you know, I was lucky enough to go see them once. You know, my dad took me, and I was like way too young to be at that kind of wrestling show. But it just was so captivating and just so... There's like this little meme of like Elmo with like an explosion behind him. And it's just like when you're 12 years old and discover ECW and like, that's it. Like that was what it was like for me.
What was it like going to that first ECW show as somebody so young?
It was bananas. it was cool. I mean, I remember it so vividly too. Like I'd been to a lot of wrestling shows, but like I remember the card almost perfectly. Like I remember Lance Storm and the Great Sasuke wrestled, and like, you know, I don't really know the difference at that time. You know, I didn't know the difference between like proficient technical wrestling and like, you know, just brawling or hardcore. Like I didn't know these styles, but I could see watching like the Great Sasuke that like, oh, this is an incredible performer. Like he did that, you know, cartwheel moonsault out of the ring, and just seeing, you know, obviously Lance Storm is an incredible wrestler. So just seeing those two was like really, really cool. And then like the Dudleys wrestled New Jack and Cronus. It was when they were the Gangsta Natives. is, you know, after like, I think Perry Saturn was out and, you know, the Gangstas is broken up. So they formed this like hodgepodge tag team, and like they were brawling in the crowd, and like they had like a Barbie Corvette, I think was a weapon. And that was used in the crowd. And I just remember as the show was clearing out, I'm just looking down at this like child's toy covered in blood. And like, I'm like wondering, is that real blood? How do they do this? Like, what am I looking at? But yeah.
There's something about going to a wrestling show when you're younger, and and then from there, when you learn a bit more about it, like about how it all gets put together, and it's a bit like learning magic in the sense that once you realize like that there's some sleight of hand behind the movements, you're either really disappointed or even more so captivated. Like, I want to know how to do that. Like,
I love that you said magic, because I think that's like, I think that's a really important thing, is like wrestling is so much like magic. It's, you know, if you look at it as if it's like this athletic contest, which it is, or if it's like acting or predetermined or all those other things, like fine, but like it is magic because it is sleight of hand. And, you know, even so many people think they totally understand it, but I can tell you, like, as someone who, you know, I'm a wrestler, so like I can say that most people maybe have like 25% of what is actually happening in the ring. And sometimes it really does just feel like magic, like when two performers click or when a match just comes together. It is so much like magic.
You, whilst you were very much intrigued by the wrestling world, it wasn't on the plan in the plans to be a wrestler. You were quite involved with the art scene as you got a bit older, weren't you, in Philadelphia?
Yeah. Yes, you did your research. yeah, so, you know, I was a lifelong fan. I was never much of an athlete, so, you know, I just never really considered being a performer and trying it out. And so, yeah, it was around 2015, 2016. I was really involved in the art scene in Philadelphia. I had some solo art shows, and I was, like, you know, starting to meet some of my goals, but it wasn't, like, as successful as I had hoped it would be. But, you know, through those connections in the art scene, I happened to see Mike Quackenbush speak at this event called Ignite Philadelphia, which was kind of similar. Do you know what, like, TED Talks are? It was very similar to that, but it was just kind of local to Philadelphia. And, you know, he spoke, and it was like, you know, he spoke about, you know, the magic of professional wrestling. I guess I'm just stuck on the magic, but I think just the art of professional wrestling. And, you know, it was really, you know, incredible speech and incredible presentation. And then I ended up getting to meet him later on where he did a smaller version of that for like a smaller audience. And, he invited a handful of us to go to a professional wrestling workshop, the Intro to Professional Wrestling at the Wrestle Factory. And I was just like, no, that's not for me. And, you know, my other friends were doing it and they just like convinced me to go. And my partner at the time was like, you love wrestling. Like, why not? Just try it. So I was like, okay. So I went. I just wanted to like touch the ropes and like, you know, roll around at the ring and just like feel that for a second. And, you know, I did better than I thought, and, you know, I could kind of hang with people for the most part. And then, you know, he invited us to do, you know, the professional wrestling 101 class, which was like a 7-week class, like to like continue that introduction to professional wrestling. And again, it was like the same conversation. I was like, no. And then my friends were like, yes. So I was like, okay. And then there's 16 of us that started. And then I think like 8 of us had managed to go all 7 weeks. And then I think only like 4 of us had passed. And, you know, so I was invited to 201 and then 301. And then all of a sudden I signed up for the core curriculum and I'm doing it full time. And I had kind of, you know, pushed everything else out of my life. And wrestling was the priority now because, like, you know, as a Chikara student, you're, you know, working ring crew and you have to train X amount of times a week. And it just became my whole life. And, you know, I don't regret it. It's like the best decision I've ever made. But I think it's kind of interesting for me because as an artist, I had all these really, really strict goals. Like, you know, I need to have this many Twitter followers by this date or, you know, make this much money or have this many clients or whatever it is. And I never really meant that. But with like wrestling, I have no goals. No very specific like SMART goals or SAM goals or however you want to call those goals. I don't really have that. I'm just like going for the ride and it's so much more rewarding than, you know, anything else I've ever done.
If you hadn't seen Mike Quackenbush that day, where do you think the art world would have taken you?
I don't know. I don't know.
Because you said yourself you were not disillusioned, but you were a bit on the back foot with it by the time wrestling came along.
Yeah, I think, you know, I didn't achieve the goals that I wanted to. Like, I wanted to work at the cool ad agency and I wanted to have, you know, like, you know, 100,000 Instagram followers and all that. And it just was never really coming together. I could never really figure it out. And maybe it just really wasn't my true passion, you know, because it was what I thought I was supposed to be ever since I was a kid. But I guess when it really came to it, like I wasn't really putting in that like maximum effort all the time versus wrestling. Like I am, like, it's so natural to me and it's not a fight to go to train 2-3 times a week. You know, it's what I want to do and it feels like what I'm kind of meant to do and it feels like what I'm good at. So, you know, it is my calling in some way.
You were, as you say, pushed along and encouraged and sort of cajoled to do the wrestling training. But what was the point when you started at the Wrestle Factory that you had that moment that you just described just then, that moment of this is my calling? Can you remember something that happened or where you went, yeah, this is for me, this is where I'm going?
I think it was somewhere around like the 201 class. So like these were called tiered classes, and they were like 7 weeks for 2 hours a week. Just very, very basic. And somewhere around like 201, that second class, it just became like, I think it was when I had like other obligations that I would just push off to go train. When I started doing that, and then there was this kind of 2 month gap between 201 and 301. And Mike kind of invited us to come in on a Saturday if we had time. And I just started doing that. And I remember like one of those classes, it was just like Travis Huckabee needed someone to like roll around with. So, you know, I didn't really know how to chain wrestle or, you know, hold for hold wrestle. But I was just like, Travis's like practiced on me for like 3 hours and we still talk about it. But like, I think then it was just like, there was nothing else I want to do. Even though I was just being like stretched and beaten up by Travis. You know, and it was just kind of like I started just saving my money, and it was just kind of like it was just so automatic. And I think that those first like 6 months to a year, like I was training as much as possible. You know, I think I had classes, you know, I was doing two classes on Monday, two classes on Wednesday. And I think that was all I could really do. And I just remember like there was one class with Ophidian early on. It was like the 6 o'clock class on Monday for 2 hours. And it was like beginner. So it was like a lot of workouts, a lot of cardio stuff. And then the second class was with Drew Gulak, who is that times a million. And just as someone who wasn't an athlete before, doing like these two really cardio intensive classes by pure like will, I was able to get through them and, you know, get in shape as quickly as possible to like, you know, to hang.
But we've got to pick another match for DVD. So we've got Sasha and Bayley tearing it up at TakeOver Brooklyn. What's your second match going to be, Still Life?
This was really hard. So this is my second point of what's really important in professional wrestling, and it's to play with reality. So especially in this era of wrestling where fans all know it's predetermined, they know it's scripted, and they're really interested in like kind of the backstage stuff. So I think, you know, it's really important to, or it's really interesting when you take real life stories and put them in this fictional world. And that's something that really only professional wrestling can do, and professional wrestling is the best at. So I think I was stuck on two matches here. I was really, really wanted to pick Daniel Bryan, Triple H, and then Daniel Bryan winning the title later that night. That whole storyline. But I think the ultimate one would be the Montreal Screwjob. So that would be Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels.
Two very different matches, two very different outcomes and feelings about them. You've got, it's obviously from Daniel Bryan and Triple H, the story of a guy who the power of the fans and pushed into the main event of WrestleMania, and just that noise and that adoration was palpable. And then you've got on the other side in 97, you've got the one of the most infamous moments in modern wrestling history with when it doesn't go according to plan of the highest order. I mean, I would like to break down both of them before we choose them properly. With Michaels with Michaels and Bret, do you remember when you first saw this and how clued up you were when you saw it?
No, I was not clued up at all. But I so to watch those pay-per-views at the time, I don't know if it was like this for you, but we could get the channel, but it was all scrambled. So it was just the audio of wrestling. And if you have ever listened to wrestling just commentary, it doesn't tell you. It's not play-by-play. It's not like watching, like, you know, a Formula One race or like a baseball game where you can listen to the radio and understand what's happening. Like in wrestling, you can't really do that because they're telling other storylines during a match or things like that. So, but I used to watch every pay-per-view like that, just on the edge of my bed, staring at this scrambled TV, just hoping, you know, the pixels, or not the pixels, the whatever TVs are would align so I could see what it was. And of course that never happened, but, yeah. And it was just like, I just didn't know what was going on and I didn't know anything about, like, I don't think I had the internet then. So I just didn't know what was happening, but you know, looking back on it, and like seeing the countless, you know, TV specials about it, it was just such, to me, it's the most incredible moment in professional wrestling. It's wrestling at the peak, where it had this real life story of Bret Hart and the contract dispute and when to lose the title and how he wanted to do that. And then making this decision to take that away from him. And then everything that came along with that, like it just set, it totally changed the course of professional wrestling in my eyes. To me, it was the end of the kayfabe era. It was kind of when professional wrestling was totally out in the open, from my perspective, at least. And I think for me, it's so perfect. Like the story is so incredible that I have a hard time believing it wasn't a work. It wasn't scripted. And I know like that's a controversial opinion, I guess, but like, it's such a perfect story and it's such an incredible story that I don't know. It's just,
it's almost too perfect.
Yes.
Two guys that legit hate each other backstage find themselves in the heart of Bret Hart's home country. And it's Shawn Michaels is set to win. And yeah, I can hear where a lot of conspirators come from on that.
Mm-hmm. But is it even a conspiracy? Because it's professional wrestling. It is just, it's scripted. So like, I don't know. Like, I like to think it was this plan the whole time. It was kind of the last big kayfabe moment in wrestling. You know, I like to think that. It makes me feel good to think that. But I mean, what really happened, I don't know.
We talk about shows that blur the lines. And then Daniel mm-hmm. Bryan and Triple H is another one of those where, mm-hmm. as opposed to the performers sort of playing a part in the fix, this kind of, for all intents and purposes, this felt like the company kowtowing to the fans.
Yeah, I mean,
do you believe that was the case, or do you believe very much like with Hart and Michaels, to quote a classic line from the Attitude Era, it was a setup all along?
I mean, you couldn't set up a rise for Daniel Bryan better than what they did, whether that was the intention or not. Like, you know, a lot of times, like especially WWE, if someone gets like the push too early, it doesn't feel genuine and the fans turn on them. I think Roman Reigns is a great example of that. Or early like Rocky Maivia. So, you know, they really kind of delayed that with Daniel Bryan. And I think it all started when he lost the title to Sheamus in like 2 seconds. You know, where everyone knows he's this incredible wrestler and deserving of more than what he's getting. And they see like the company like screwing him. And like, you know, not giving him a chance to have his moment. It just kind of builds all this steam. And I like to think that they knew that, because it's kind of hard to miss. And especially when he's getting these kind of storylines, like everything he did really well. And I think I just started wrestling again at that moment where it was Team Hell No, you know, and the like their therapist and all that, which was like really funny. But it's just like it was maybe not the most captivating storyline on paper, and to make it like money and to make it gold, you know, they knew what they had in him. And, you know, I think it was just a matter of time, but to keep like kind of suppressing him in quotes, and to see him kind of surpass that, it made it feel like the fans brought him to life. But like they've been a business forever. They know what they're doing. So I think part of it was the intent of it. Whether it was going to end there or end a year later or whenever it not end, but where he was going to get that title. I mean, who knows, but, I think just the fans felt like they were a part of it. And I think that's the important thing.
I can see why they would feel why there is that question mark over it, because there is times in history, you know, we go back to 95 with Diesel. We go back to 2006 with like where John Cena was getting some angry reaction. There's the Roman Reigns situation before his almighty heel turn this year, where the fans have been told this is the guy and the fans have gone, no, he's not.
Yeah.
No, they're not. Get them away. And so you didn't get that vibe that there was that intent for WWE to go, here's the guy with Daniel Bryan, which I can understand would have probably enhanced that desire to make. And because he's so, in comparison to what is perceived to be the guy in the company, so unconventional that you couldn't, but so good at everything, it couldn't be denied. However, you can only take one of these onto the desert island, so you've got to choose. I'll let you take Bryan and Triple H in WrestleMania, or Michaels and Bret Hart, Survivor Series 97.
I have to go with Michaels and Bret Hart, because it's just the peak of wrestling to me.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Wrestling is all about sort of the amazing stories and characters. And for me, watching from this side of the water, there was no finer example of great characters than with Chikara. Like, just its own multiverse, and you became a part of that. So I'm desperate to know the story behind you getting in the ring, rolling around with Travis Huckabee, going from there to becoming Still Life with Apricots and Pears.
Let me introduce to you Ursa Minor in the night sky. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Still Life with Apricots and Pears.
The greatest artist of this or any other generation.
In Chikara, like, you don't graduate until there's a position for you on the roster. Like, it's not just you finish training and then you start wrestling. Like, there needs to be a place for you. Or there needs to be a character or a storyline or whatever it is. So there were, like, a handful of us who had all been kind of training at the same point, and we're all kind of, like, ready-ish to debut. So there was about, I think there was something like, I don't know, there's a handful of spots, and everyone else kind of started getting their character, and I was kind of like, didn't have that yet. So I thought, like, oh no, like, I'm gonna have to wait like another year and train. I don't know if that's what I'm gonna do. And, you know, maybe I need to go back to art, or, you know, get a job or something else. And then Blank had the idea to do, you know, to have two pieces of art, to take like two students or two wrestlers and turn them into, you know, his team, and to create two pieces of human art. So that's kind of how I got thrown in. You know, I kind of felt like I was a little bit left behind. And then, you know, he picked these two kind of like left behind wrestlers to, you know, give them life. So I remember when I got that message of just like, hey, you're going to debut in 2 weeks, and this is your name. And you can imagine training for 2 years, thinking about, like, what's my character going to be? Who am I going to be? What am I going to do? And when you get told it's Still Life with Apricots and Pears, like, you know, my heart definitely sank. And I was just like, what is this? I don't want this. And I think, like, a lot of, like, Chikara characters have a similar story where you're told, like, oh, you're going to be a snake, or you're going to be a pumpkin, or you're going to be a frog, whatever it is. You're just like, wait, that's what? How do I do that? So I got this character, and then, you know, I started wrestling, and it was, I didn't really have any details on it. You know, there was, it was loosely based on Batman. Like, there was the Batman with Jack Nicholson's Joker. And, you know, he had burnt his girlfriend at the time, which was, I forget what her name was. But she just had, no, not Harley Quinn. It was, sorry, I'm not like totally up on comic world. It was Jerry Hall played her. But anyway, there's like the scene where she kind of had like the burnt, she had a mask on over like her, you know, she got acid thrown in her face or whatever it was. And she kind of like turned, and there's just like this quick scene of that, of just showing her covering her scars, which was like the kind of relation to like Blank, and kind of the inspiration for the Blank character. So that was kind of all we really had. And, you know, it was definitely like those first matches were just dreadful. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. I felt really out of sync. And, you know, it wasn't kind of until like I started wrestling as a singles wrestler where like Ursa Minor had decided to go on to other things. And, you know, Blank had, you know, killed them in a sense, you know, destroyed the art, that I really kind of found myself. And that's where I kind of started, you know, my internal like kind of self-discovery of like realizing that I was like transgender, and I started transitioning at that time. So it was kind of all these things were like really aligning for me, and you know, this character kind of helped me do that. And yeah, and then, you know, that next season is when I started feuding with Blank. And I think when we were talking about like real life stories coming into wrestling, I think that was a, we were lucky to kind of have that. I think that's kind of what played a role in our storyline, because it was, you know, I was originally just spent, you know, there to be like second fiddle to Blank and to like play a supporting role to them. But all of a sudden, you know, I became really popular, and, you know, I'm fortunate for that. But, you know, then it became like I was almost more popular than Blank. So there was kind of like a real life, kind of conflict there, which that wasn't the intent. You know, I was like a human chair and like stepped on to walk into the ring, and all of a sudden, you know, the fans are really behind me. So I think you can really see that when we wrestled at King of Trios, where, you know, that wasn't the storyline. That wasn't what it was supposed to be. And I think there was a lot of genuine like anger and, well, not anger, but like genuine emotion. It was a genuine release for both of us to have that match. And it felt very symbolic to like destroy the mask, which Blank destroyed my mask at the end of the match, which was just kind of like, you know, ending that chapter for me, where I could start to control my own look. And that's when I could start designing my own gear and kind of really control my own presentation. So that felt, you know, there's a lot of emotion there. And that was something like I really thought about, like Sasha and Becky in that moment, preparing for that match, how to capture that feeling.
It's appropriate that just now we've talked about how about Daniel Bryan and the story there, and how the fans made that seem like an organic experience. And we're talking now about how it was never the design for you to to become the guy, you know, to go on to become the last winner of the Young Lions Cup. Like, that was never on the cards. So when did that conversation occur, where with you and Mike and the guys at Chikara, to say, we're going to roll with this and see where it goes?
I think Bryce was a big proponent of that. I think it just kind of happened, you know. You know, I didn't know I was winning the Young Lions Cup until that day. Like, I knew I was supposed to have a really big match with Boomer Hatfield, but that's kind of all I knew. I think it just kind of happened. Like, I think, you know, maybe Mike sensed something in me, because I really, at that point, I haven't really shown what I could do as a performer. I feel like I was just aimless before that point. And I think it was just kind of this like opportunity to really show what I can do and to like give me a bit of confidence and a bit of like an emotional push by, you know, giving me the win. And, you know, I think that pressure and that kind of opportunity really, I don't know, it really inspired me. And I felt like a lot more, not pressure, but I don't know the word I'm looking for, but responsibility, I guess, to kind of live up to all the previous champions. And, you know, my first big defense was against Carlos Romo at, you know, WrestleMania weekend at the Collective, who was an incredible performer, which you probably know. And I was like so intimidated to work with him, but, you know, he was such a dream to wrestle. And, you know, from there, I just kept having these really great opportunities to work with people that I always wanted to work with. And, you know, Bryce was kind of in charge of, we did a bunch of shows at baseball stadiums that summer, and Bryce was kind of in charge of that. So he asked who I thought I'd have a good match with, and I gave him the list, and that's how I got Cabana Man Dan and Bro Keller and Alley Cat, and that kind of list of people to work with. So Bryce was definitely a huge person behind that. And Sydney Bacabella was a huge help in the character. Orange Cassidy, who I got to train with a lot at that time, was a huge help with like kind of shaping the character. And obviously Blank and Mike kind of played a role too.
When did you find out about Chikara closing?
Same time everyone else did. You know, those kind of stories and the allegations were things I didn't know for the most part. That was the first I was hearing about them. So, yeah, obviously that went around immediately. And, you know, we had some Zoom calls to kind of go over things and to see, you know, what had happened and the story behind all that stuff. And I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. And, you know, Hollow Wicked was... You know, I really credit, like, I had a lot of trainers at the factory, but my two primary ones were Hollow Wicked and Orange Cassidy. So, you know, Orange was already long gone by then, but, you know, Hollow Wicked was kind of the mainstay in Chikara. And when he decided to resign, you know, I kind of would follow him. So that's when I made the decision to resign as well. And then Chikara closed down, I think, a couple of days later when, you know, the bulk of us had already left.
Do you think we'll ever see the likes of a promotion like Chikara again? Because it's a very unique concept of a company. The more we talk about it, and the more I realise that is that just not in and itself that it was like a multiverse in terms of characters, but also behind the scenes in terms of how it was run and how it operated. Do you think we'll ever see a company like that again?
It's hard to say, like, you know, because Chikara, I feel like, inspired a lot of companies. So there's a lot of what you see on the independent wrestling scene today, which are, you can see the inspiration to Chikara, whether that's the funny names for events or, you know, the characters or the storylines, you know, having these kind of more comedy characters that can wrestle really good, things like that. You see sprinkles of that everywhere. But as far as, like, exactly what Chikara was, where it was a wrestling school with a promotion, with these really, really in-depth storylines. Like, I don't know. I don't think there'll ever be someone like Mike Quackenbush who can, like, you know, do that, who can, you know, have these insane stories and these multi-level stories. I haven't seen anything close to that. You know, I think it was something special. And it's hard to see something that's exactly like that pop up again.
We're just coming off of Effie's Big Gay Brunch from the GCW Weekender, and there's been so much love for you and what you do online for it. I want to read this. They don't know I've taken it, but it's from Maria Fanning from Voices of Wrestling.
Okay.
And they wrote, "For one of the first times in a long while, I didn't have to shunt my trans identity to the side when enjoying wrestling. I was watching two trans wrestlers in the ring putting on a amazing show." And that was for your match over the weekend. And do you feel like there's a lot more eyes on you now as a result of Effie's Big Gay Brunch and the GCW Collective Weekend?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely have a lot more, you know, that was kind of definitely the biggest match of my career thus far. So definitely like the amount of, I was shocked at what my phone looked like after that match. And then, you know, getting like my Google Alerts off the charts, you know, so I do feel that in a sense, but you know, that match was just something that was really, really personal to me, and performing at Gay Brunch was something that was really personal to me. And I think that kind of, that's still where I'm at with that moment, where it was just something that I needed to like pay tribute to Sheik and to have that moment with her. That's kind of what I take away from, and just being able to be, you know, on an all queer show and to showcase what we can do as queer performers. You know, I think a lot of people see me as like a comedy wrestler. I'm this big, larger than life character, and to see like people are always shocked that I know how to wrestle. Like that's like a really common thing where like fans come up and we're just like, I didn't know you knew how to wrestle. So like, hello, like, do you know who trained me? Like, do you know where I'm from? Like, of course I know how to wrestle. So that's always funny. Like, that's always always a funny bit that comes out of my matches. But yeah, I think just I lost my train of thought, but it was something really personal to me. That's where I'm at with it.
How does it feel reading a comment like Maria Fanning's from Voice of Wrestling?
Overwhelmed, you know, it makes me emotional. Like I definitely like, I get a lot of that, and that doesn't mean it's any less special. Like it's all really, really special, and it changed what my goals were. I know I talked about not having goals, but I do have some, or it changed my motivation, or it changed what I'm trying to do with this. Like, you know, where, when I first started, I started having like kind of personal aspirations of wanting to wrestle this person or wanting to work at this place. But, you know, having these moments with fans and kind of having that responsibility changed what I want out of being a performer. Like, you know, having these shows or being able to perform at places that are safe places for queer folks and trans folks, and to be someone that can help inspire someone, that's way more important than anything else that I do. And I'm not gonna lie, it was like really hard at first because I was still like, you know, I just started transitioning when like Still Life came out. Like the performer like me had also just come out. Like those happened in parallel. You know, I'm transitioning the same time Still Life is transitioning. So I'm still learning, and I still like need people in my own life to look up to and to ask for advice and to ask for help. And then, you know, I'm getting fans who are sending me direct messages, you know, asking for advice or just wanting to share their stories or coming out to me or whatever it may be. It was really overwhelming at first, but now it's something, it's so special to me. And it's almost every single show I go to or that I get to perform on, you know, I have a fan that comes up to me at the merch table to share their story. And it's, you know, I get so touched by that, and it's like really, it's really important, and it's kind of why I do what I do now.
There'll be people listening today who may be in a similar situation that you were during your decision to transition. Incidentally, was there a moment for you where you decided, this is what I want to do, this is what I need to do, and I'm now ready to tell people?
Yeah, I think it was something, it was obviously always in the back of my mind my whole life, but, you know, I just never felt ready for it. I never felt confident enough. I never felt like I would be accepted, and I was always just really scared to start transitioning. And then, or I was just in denial of it. And I think being a wrestler and to perform a Still Life gave me confidence that I've never had before, and gave me this opportunity to express myself in a way I never really had before. So that helped. But then, you know, it was so it was beginning of 2009 when I made my decision that I was gonna transition. And then a few weeks later, like I had no idea, I didn't know what was going to happen with me as a wrestler. But then a few weeks later, there's a video of Dark Sheik at Hood Slam, and she came out to the crowd after a match and, you know, came out to them and said that she had started hormone replacement therapy and didn't know what it meant. Or not that she didn't know what it meant, but was just like ready for that ride. It was just that next step in her life. And that inspired me so much. And that I felt like such a sense of peace that, like, well, someone else is doing this. And if she can do this, then I can do this. And, you know, there's so much love to her in that moment. And, you know, after that, that I felt confident that I could do this. And then, you know, I was lucky enough to get invited out to Hood Slam a couple of months later and, you know, got to become really close friends with her and, you know, have since got to tell her about how much that moment meant to me when she came out and how that inspired me and helped me. And that's why, you know, I told Effie, like, this is the match that I want. And, you know, I told him why, and that's, he made it happen. And, you know, I'm really thankful for that opportunity, and I'm glad it was a good match if people liked it. But it's just like, as I said before, it was a really personal thing for me to have that moment with her.
For those who are listening today, who may be going on about to embark on a similar journey that you're on now, is there any advice that you can offer?
I don't know. There's so many different things, but it's just like it's for me, it's so worth it. Like, you know, it's really, really hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever done, but like, it's the most rewarding thing I've ever done. I feel it's such a sense of peace to be myself and to be working on becoming myself that it's so worth it. But I think it's just important to like, make sure you have surround yourself with community and with friends who really care about you and are there for you in those dark times when you need to be pulled up. And, you know, there's never like a perfect time to do it. You just have to just start and go at your own pace. There's no rush to this, you know. I'm definitely someone who transitions, like I'm doing it very slowly and at my own pace, and I'm in no rush. And just kind of doing what feels comfortable. And well, I guess I have to force myself to be a little uncomfortable, but like, you know, just kind of going at my own pace. So, you know, it's not a race.
We're going to, before we get into a bit of stuff that you're up to this week and mm-hmm. your final match, I'd like to spring this on people.
Oh, no.
Yes. Consider yourself well sprung. as well as three wrestling matches, you're also allowed to take onto the island with you. It's good to get people's initial reaction to these. A movie, an album, and a luxury item. So just by that, I mean like something that means something to you that can be a creature comfort or it can be something useful for the island, but that's up to you. But we'll get to that in a second. But if I would say to you, you can take a movie with you, what movie would you take?
One of my favorite movies is Snatch. So I think I would watch that, especially when I was in college, I watched that all the time. So that's the first one that comes to mind. I don't know if I think more about it, I would change it. But I think that one was just so... it's so layered with stories and it's really funny, but it's also a lot of action and it's just a lot of fun quotes, which I'm not going to do now. But yeah, I think that at top of mind, that's what I have to go with right now. But
good, sure, good shout. How about an album? What would you take as far as an album goes?
London Calling. I think The Clash's London Calling is my favorite album, so I would pick that one. I think just the diversity of genre within it, and just, you know, I loved, you know, I love punk rock, so just having an album that kind of pushes the boundaries of that and changes the genre, but still has the authenticity of punk rock and, you know, really important meaning to the songs. Top of mind, it would be London Calling.
When did you first hear that album by The Clash in particular?
I feel like it's one of those albums that's always just there. You know, like Smells Like Teen Spirit, that song's just kind of always there, you know? But I don't know, maybe it was kind of when I was in like high school and got really into punk rock and then started wanting to trace back the roots of like, you know, I listened to Newfound Glory, but they were inspired by Bad Religion, who was inspired by, you know, The Clash, I guess is that next step. So, just kind of looking back on the history of punk rock and just discovering that and just knowing that, like, this is the beginning of it. And, you know, a lot of, like, older music doesn't really like, I appreciate it, but I don't, like, love it. Or it doesn't, like, it doesn't become, like, on repeat. But that album for sure did.
And how about a luxury item, then?
What would you define a luxury item?
So I'll give you some of the luxury items that people have taken in the past. So when we had Quack on the show, he took one of his suits, one of his fancy suits. Big fan of those.
On an island?
I know, right? Go figure. Effie is taking Cranberry, if I remember correctly. So that's happening. James Storm is bringing toilet paper because he's concerned about hygiene in that department. Nick Aldis is bringing a Jag, I guess, to drive around the island. If it'd be an item that can mean something to you, it can be a functional item if you want. It's completely your shout.
Well, I guess I thought it was just like luxury items, like, you know, my expensive watch or something like that. But you know, a nice pair of diamond earrings. No, I would definitely take, if I can take my pet, then yeah, obviously my dog Kevin. You know, I adopted him right before quarantine, so he's kind of how I got through it, and he has more personality than most people, so definitely my dog Kevin.
How long have you had Kevin?
Just about a year. I'm coming up on his adoption day in November, so I'm gonna cook him a big steak for his adoption day. And
do you celebrate the adoption day like a birthday?
Well, this will be the first one, but yeah, I think so. Like, definitely, like, cook him, you know, a nice meal. And you know, I actually just had I was at Officer Magnum's birthday party with Solo and Willow. So yeah, I think maybe I'll do something similar. Have them over for Kevin's adoption day.
We're doing an adoption day party for our cat on Saturday, Halloween. That's the day that a year ago, the day that Pablo arrived to us. tips for a good adoption day party. What would you recommend? I know it's a cat; it's slightly different. But whether or not there's anything that crosses the species timeline.
Well, they're going to have fun regardless. So I think for Officer Magnum's birthday, we made sure to have a couple cases of White Claw. And then we made empanadas, or Solo made empanadas. So maybe we'll do the same thing for Kevin.
That sounds amazing. White
Claw and steak, though.
Steak and some sort of dog-based beer.
Yeah, I don't know what that'd be. I think just water then. I don't know.
I'm sure you can get dog beer. I'm sure you can.
Is that a thing?
It's gotta be a thing. It's 2020. Yeah, they dog beer. Hang on, I'm googling dog beer. Yeah, dog beer's a thing. Beer for dogs. There's one available at fetch.co.uk called Bottom Sniffer. So that's an idea.
All right, send me a case for that, and we'll celebrate.
This is Bottom Sniffers all around. Amazing. Boo, it's me. We'll be back to Still Life with Apricots and Pears in just a moment. Want to say thank you to some wonderful people we work with here at Cultaholic, including our friends at Audible. You can get yourself a free wrestling book on us right now by going to cultaholic.com/audible. From there, sign up to Audible for 30 days. Get yourself a free wrestling book on us. And if you don't like Audible and you choose to cancel, you can keep the audiobook. It's good, that, isn't it? We've also teamed up with Quidco. If you want some cash back when you buy online in the UK, we are working with them, who in turn will sort you out with cash back when you buy from hundreds of online retailers like eBay and Argos and Amazon. Go to cultaholic.com/cashback right now to sign up with Quidco. And in doing so, you'll get a free fiver on us paid into your bank account or via your PayPal. cultaholic.com/cashback. And we are the main event of WrestleCrate next month. You'll be getting a Cultaholic exclusive t-shirt in your WrestleCrate for November. And if you sign up using the code Cultaholic, you get an autograph bundle in your first mystery box. Cultaholic is the code you need at WrestleCrate.co.uk. Talk to us about this weekend, or this Thursday rather, it should be Camp Leapfrog on IWTV. Yeah. What's happening?
So Camp Leapfrog, it's going to be our Halloween special. There's going to be lots of crazy shenanigans going down at Camp Leapfrog. So it'll be on IWTV at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then on Facebook, there'll be a match, like the I'm in the Facebook match, which I'm really excited for. So definitely check, look for those IWTV updates on Thursday. I don't know what time it's going to go on, but tune into the full show at 8 p.m., I believe. Let me just double check. It is 8 p.m. on IWTV this Thursday, the 29th.
Talk to us. Have you done shows with Camp Leapfrog before?
Yes. Yeah, I was on the first show where I got to wrestle Cheeseburger, who is now my trainer. I train with at the Worldwide Dojo with Cheeseburger and Sumi Sakai. So, it was just kind of this idea that Chris Levin had and Sam Letourneau's helping out. And we're just, going to summer camp and there's a wrestling ring there and there's shenanigans.
Now, looking at the roster for the show, for things that go bump in the ring on Thursday, mm-hmm. and obviously yourself and there's Blank and there's Warwolf Creed. It seems a bit like a that kind of Chikara style level of fun with just big characters, just bringing the noise. And I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of us who kind of, we're kind of looking for somewhere, like a new home and a new place. Like, we're all very close, like all of us who train together and wrestle together, all very close friends. So it's just kind of a natural fit that this would be the next place to go. And, I'm lucky that I have that. And also, like, starting to work at Beyond Wrestling a lot more. Me and Blank are a team again. We've kind of mended those fences. And, I'm lucky to have those two places to kind of fill this void in my life.
Did you do summer camp when you were younger?
No. I think I did one for like 2 weeks. But my parents, my mom was home during the summer, so I didn't need like extra camp. And I was very much like an indoor kid, like I said before. So I was happy playing video games or, doing art.
Well, you get a chance to experience it on Thursday, which is tomorrow at time of broadcast of this. So remind us once again where people can go if they want to watch Camp Leapfrog, things that go bump in the ring.
It is on IWTV at 8 p.m. and then also on Facebook Live or whatever that works. Sometime during the day will be my match.
Third and final match. For your Desert Island. We've decided on Brett versus Sean, the Montreal Screwjob from Survivor Series 97, mm-hmm. Bailey and Sasha Banks from TakeOver Brooklyn. What's your third and final match going to be?
So this one's hard because it's not, I don't know if it's exactly a match, but it would be, so my third point is important to wrestling. So we're creating emotion is number one. We're playing with reality is number two. And number three would be expanding the art form of professional wrestling. So pushing the boundaries of what professional wrestling can be. And whether that's, that means in the performance itself or expanding upon the bubble of professional wrestling. And that means like getting more mainstream culture or just different types of art forms or different worlds, bringing that in. So for me, that would be Andy Kaufman. And I guess like if it had to be a match, it'd be a match with Jerry Lawler.
And look at Lawler go to work on him. He picks Andy up. He's going to suplex him. He suplexed him down. And now he rolls him over for the pile drive. Nope, a body slam.
You fans who started booing and hissing me tonight, don't try that again. Don't try that again. I am a star, and next time I come here, I want you all to get down on your knees and bow down to me. And if I pass you by, kiss my feet.
Yeah, okay.
You bunch of slimy hicks from Memphis, Tennessee. You hicks, go and plow the fields and the farms, you little hicks.
Just keep running your jaw, and you'll have worse than you got right now.
That moment for me is, I think, an incredibly important moment in professional wrestling and something I'm really drawn to. I remember we have a channel called Comedy Central here, and there was like a special about Andy Kaufman, and a huge part of his life was professional wrestling. So I remember seeing that as a kid, and it just, like, you know, I was just really inspired by that, because he had the mediums of television and wrestling, and he was constantly trying to change it and do something new and kind of just expand it, which I think is just really important to me and something that really inspires me.
Could you ever see something like an Andy Kaufman experience occurring again in wrestling in 2020? Because that felt very real, and it blurred the lines.
Yes. Sure. I think, especially nowadays, where people think, I don't know, they think it's obvious what's real and what's fake. I think you could obviously do that in wrestling. Yeah.
there is still something that can come from that.
I think so. Yeah. And I mean, it's something that I'm interested in trying, and you know, I hope I get opportunities to kind of like play with that a little bit more. But yeah, I think that's important. And I think this was another one where, like, when I was thinking about these matches, I just kind of like wanted to really, it was things that I still remember, even though it's been years and years since I've seen them. Like all of these matches that I talked about, I watched Sasha and Bayley recently, but all of these things, like, I can't remember the last time I saw them, but I still reference them. They still like live in my head. So this is just another one of just like, you know, I remember where Andy Kaufman's like banging on the TV. I think it was either a documentary. It might've been in the movie too, where like he wanted it to look like the TV was out of sync or whatever it was with old TVs. And he wanted viewers to bang on the TV to fix it. So I think just that kind of like mindset and that wanting that interaction with your viewer, that just really sticks to me. And that's something that like is always kind of in the back of my head of, when I'm making art or performing or whatever it may be, like, I think there's something really interesting there to have that interaction and to have that confusion and to play with what people's expectations are and what they think is real or what they think is the performance or a mistake or whatever it may be. I think it's so cool.
It's like magic, as we said earlier on. Mm-hmm. It's once you know how it works, you either don't like it or you want to work with it. You want to manipulate it. You want to have fun with it and find the sides with it all, which it sounds like is what your plan is.
Yeah, I think so. And especially with, like, there's so many expectations of what wrestling is, and there's so many things that people think they know about professional wrestling. And I think there's that space of what people are confident in, like what an audience is confident in knowing, that they think is true and they think is genuine. That's where there's interesting things to play with, you know, and that's what's really interesting about magic. Like Penn and Teller, like, I think they do bits where they like give the trick away, but then they do another whole trick there. It doesn't really tell you the full story. So that's, for me, I think that's the interesting thing of professional wrestling. And that's kind of the I don't know, that's the place to look at, especially with wrestling has this huge history of like where it was always it was so serious about maintaining the artifice that it was real, and to hide those things. That's a huge part of our culture as wrestlers. And I think there's ways to bring that back and interesting ways to play with that. Yeah.
And if people want to follow your journey in bringing that back, where can they find out all about you?
I am at Apricots Pears, not Apricots Spears, Apricots Pears.
It's Britney's lesser known sister.
Yeah. I know. Everyone's like, you should do a spear. And I'm like, I'm not going to like, you know, trash any moves, but the spear is one of my least favorite moves. Or I think it's just too overdone, but whatever. I'm not going to trash it. It's fine. But yeah, so it's at Apricots Pears on Twitter, on Instagram, and follow me on Pinterest. I'm really big into Pinterest, and no one follows me there. So Apricots Pears on all of them.
What was the last thing you put on your Pinterest wall?
I was looking for, I'm getting a new set of gear made, so I was just pinning some pictures to send to Closet Champion, who designs my gear. So just sent some new, specifically new mask designs. So my hair is quite long now, so I need something to have it out. So just like different ideas of how we can incorporate The visor, which is kind of tricky for a mask, and which means like both eyes are, it's just one open cut for both eyes. So how we can pull that off with also like the open top. So that was the latest thing on my Pinterest. And then tons of like graphic design bits, like different, you know, esoteric like typography things. And I'm really into screen printing too, so different screen prints.
I don't think anybody's ever given their Pinterest account, and I'm sad of that. I want more people from now on. If you're going to come on this show, you need a Pinterest.
Yeah,
that's the rule.
I've had Pinterest since the beginning.
You're a Pinterest OG over there.
I was a beta tester for Pinterest. No lie, I was. I was really into like I worked in a tech company at that time, so I got to a chance to beta test Pinterest.
No way.
Yeah. Originally, it was more like a shopping based app, which I guess it still kind of is, but like. The big thing was like, how do you get users to put the price of the items on there? Which I think has since kind of gone away, and now it's just kind of like a mess. What like the original links are, but yeah, so I got to like submit feedback on it.
When Still Life was doing that, it was top of the game, but yeah. Now it's not. It's slipped back a bit, but you'll always be the OG of Pinterest, as far as I'm concerned.
I'll have that in my like my announcer notes.
Yes, do it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.